Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan.
Raw Reaction with Harry.
And now, the end is near, and so we face our final curtain. I guess technically it's our final and our first curtain, if you want to look at it that way. It was just for you, Liz.
Thanks so much.
Figured I'd class up the joint a little bit to start the show. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Chair Shot Radio Network. And technically, our introduction music is out of date now because we are no longer the Raw Reaction. We are now simply the Reaction because this will be the final episode of the show to only discuss Monday Night Raw. We will be incorporating Friday Night SmackDown Live into the discussion as well, starting next week, Tony, so don't have a panic attack.
I never panic.
You don't. You're cool as a cucumber. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
Well, bitches.
And the co-hostess with the mostesses, Liz Puglisi.
Hello.
And it is the season premiere for a show that doesn't have an off-season, okay, whatever the fuck that means, here on The Raw Reaction, and we will have our standard format for you that we've kind of stuck with from the start of the show, where we give you a couple of talking points, we go over some quick hits, and then we tell you what the hell's going on. I would say we're doing a pay-per-view prediction special at the end of the show, but there's literally three fucking matches announced. We're not doing predictions.
I don't know.
Besides, Liz will be on too much of a high from meeting Jinder Mahal on Friday anyway.
It's going to be in Hall and Nash on Thursday.
Jinder Mahal
still
and Nash.
Say,
well,
doesn't that sound like the outtakes of a Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young album?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Totally listen to that. Okay, so I have a very snarky title for tonight's episode of The Reaction, and I think you guys will understand it when I say it. And if you don't, then we'll address the rumor in the elephant in the rumor as well. Welcome to the B-Show. For those who haven't heard, with the debut of SmackDown this Friday night on Fox's original actual network Fox, which Vince has been wanting since like the 80s, actual network television weekly. Raw is pretty much viewed as the B show now in the WWE, and SmackDown is now viewed as the A show. Tony, in the grand scheme of things, is A show, B show really a relevant concept to wrestling fans, or should it just matter what the content of the show is?
I mean, only in so much as the WWE allows it to be that way. You know, we're nearing the month of November, so chances are we're going to suddenly have to pick a side, as if it hasn't been the same company for the past however many years.
Well, we're also coming up on that show in Saudi Arabia on October 31st as well, where we're going to have to pick a... Okay, whatever. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. Liz, do you think there's a such thing as an A show and a B show in the WWE, or do you think it's just something that the WWE kind of considers internally and that the fans don't care about?
I think the fans care about it more than... I mean, I'm sure the company cares about it, but I think it's something that the fans play up more than anything. You know, who had the better, you know, who had the better week, and you know, they like to say that Vince or this one or that one doesn't care about SmackDown, so that's what makes it the B show because the bigger names are on Raw and blah blah blah. I think it's a bit of both.
So my opening talking point for tonight's episode of the show was Seth Rollins defends the Universal title against Rey Mysterio. Well, if you haven't watched the episode of Raw yet and you're listening to this show, spoiler alert, that match doesn't happen. Rey Mysterio comes out to start the show. Wait, before we get started on that, what did you guys think of the new set? What did you guys think of the new opening video? Tony?
I mean, I'm all for, like, you know, fresh changes and whatnot, so anything they do differently never really bothers me. I'll admit that the stage looks a little bit smaller when in direct comparison of a wrestler standing in front of it. Kind of has this impression that somebody's holding a sheet up behind the wrestler. But I'm sure I could see the capabilities that that has much more so than what they had before. It looks like they can put a lot more imagery, a lot more videos and stuff, so I'm indifferent about it. I don't particularly care.
Liz?
I see a lot of complaints about it for one reason or the other, but to be honest, I didn't really pay that much attention to the opening credits or whatever, or the set. So I will have to look at it and get back to you on that.
I heard people comparing it to a skateboard ramp. I personally compared it to the warp wall from American Ninja Warrior, which led me to almost dub tonight's episode of the show American Ninja Wrestlers, but I don't think enough people would have gotten that joke. Silence, exactly what I expected. Let's move on.
Yeah, it's also not a really good joke. So,
I mean, they didn't get other one either, but okay.
My studio is screwing up. Give me one quick second. I got to fight with the studio. We're going to take a quick interlude here, and we'll be right back.
Now get the drugs from my generation. I'll take the fall, the saints, and across the nation. And it's a sin, the gods, the fake, the fraud, the messer with me.
You know what happens? This is an immediate
part.
Take the fish.
let's see. I didn't dislike it. I thought it was actually a really hot way to open Raw. If you're going for a season premiere, you know, opener, it was a pretty solid opener, I think. And not because Brock beat down Ray, but more so because he beat down his son and the crowd responded to it all night. I don't know. Maybe it's the mess in Arizona, but they were on point for a bulk of the evening. And it was a joy to be a part of it. So I think that the opening of Raw as a whole worked out really, really well. It asserted Brock as the dominant force that we already know he is, but it also gave a anything could happen feel. And props to Dominic for bumping, like, not only safely, but in a pretty badass way. Like, he looked like he got zero offensive moves in, but in terms of, like, making it look real, he did really well. I mean, we've seen people who are unseasoned or untrained take bumps, and it's not pretty. I mean, Steve-O, Machine Gun Kelly, Seth Green. Not that Seth Green didn't do well, but, you know, just those are off the top of my head where you just saw them, like, just look horrible. And, of course, Dominic's been trained, but it's still just nice to see that that he's been trained properly. Yeah, all in all, I thought it was a hot open. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I didn't mind anything that happened. One could complain that, you know, you're kind of squashing Rey Mysterio, but it's Brock Lesnar. So, I don't know, it was a good way to start the show. I can't say that it stayed that way for the whole show, but when you get your crowd to chant asshole to the big guy, then you're doing something right.
See, I'm going to disagree with you. I didn't like the start to the show here because you're bait and switching your biggest mess that you have announced for the show right off of the bat. And for as much as some people may not care about Ray in his current iteration, there are a lot of people who still feel that Ray is a viable draw. He still sells merchandise. He still moves T-shirts on the website. He still sells masks in the arena and stuff. And I'm sure, because there were quite a few Ray Mysterio masks in that arena tonight. And you're taking away a match that a lot of those people probably came to see in Ray having that match with Seth Rollins for the Universal title a little bit later on in the show. Liz, are you okay with the bait and switch given what we got out of it, or do you think that it was a mistake to do so on what you're calling your season premiere?
Liz, I don't know,
you're absolutely right. When he came out in street clothes, I was chatting in the messenger group, and I was like, Ray's not wrestling tonight because, you know, he was out in street clothes. And actually, my first thing was like, oh, I wonder if he's actually legit injured where, like, he can't wrestle since recently he did have issues, whether they were legit or not. I honestly don't know. Wolfhand and Tawny honestly doesn't even care.
They were.
So I couldn't remember. So I kind of suspected that something was up from the get-go. But, I mean, they've done it before. I mean, is it a big thing now because it's Ray? Because he's a legend that can still wrestle or whatever. So I know I'm not the biggest, you know, Ray fan, but obviously he still can wrestle. I've always admitted that. But, I mean, something they've done before, I don't think it's a big deal because it's the season, you know, the season premiere. I actually enjoyed it immensely because I don't like Ray. And I was thrilled I didn't have to watch another Ray match. But I thought it was great. I thought it, like, really kicked it off. And, you know, you got to see a little bit of Dominic, you know, in the ring. And he did take them, you know, really well in my limited, you know, knowledge. But, you know, Tony said it too, so it must be right. And I don't mean that sarcastically. I mean that as Tony has more knowledge than I do on that. I don't think it was, you know, so awful. And it just, you know, sure, there's people who wanted to see, you know, Ray wrestle. But the matches get changed all the time, so I don't really think it's that, you know, that big of a deal.
Tony, what are your thoughts on the bait and switch here?
I don't really care. I mean, Seth Rollins versus Ray probably would have been great, but it doesn't mean that we're not going to see it in the future. I'm disliking Seth more and more. And tonight was added more fuel to that flame, and I'll explain why a little bit later. But no, I think that what you're doing here, you introduced Dominic to the crowd in a way that is different than ever before. You gave some heat to Brock Lesnar for the upcoming match on SmackDown, which is arguably more important. You deny the possibility of Rey Mysterio getting a loss because he would have against Seth. And of course they had a different story to tell at the end of the show. So it was never their intention. Like, I get what you mean about possibly disappointing the fans, especially in Arizona when like 90% of them are Mexican and couldn't wait to hear Rey Mysterio cut the same promo in English and Spanish as if that was necessary. So I can understand the, you know, the dislike for the bait and switch, but ultimately it's not something that's new in the wrestling world. You do that on the indies, it might be a problem, but you do it on Raw, it's like, all right, whatever.
Your counterpart over at 411, Larry Zonka, proceeded to call Ray the non-union Mexican Kofi fill-in for the evening.
Yeah, basically.
I'll let everybody out there read what they make of that, and then go check out Larry's Raw review over at 411. And check out Tony's while you're there, too.
Yeah, I'm a lot funnier than
I would be. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you to go read Stephen Mitchell's review over on thechairshot.com as well. Show! All right. So this leads us to Miz TV. Kind of. Sort of. If we have to. I love Ric Flair. I've always loved Ric Flair. There was a point in my life when I grew up that I wanted to be Ric Flair. What the fuck was that, Ric Flair? They officially announced the first match for Crown Jewel in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, even though they don't specifically say the words Saudi Arabia, as it will be Team Hogan versus Team Flair in a 5-on-5 match, probably an elimination match because fuck Survivor Series. Deep breaths. Deep breaths. And the first two members for both teams are announced. For Team Hogan, it would be Seth Rollins and Rusev. I guess now that Rusev's a real American, it works.
Take the fish.
Against Baron Corbin and Randy Orton. Tony.
What's up?
I can't believe I'm about to say these words. It's time to stop giving Ric Flair a live microphone, isn't it?
It was time to stop giving Ric Flair a live microphone like 5 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, this isn't new. This isn't new.
For Hogan wasn't much better.
Well, I've never liked Hogan.
I don't mean to interrupt, but Rick was way, way worse. At least Hogan didn't sound like he was about to have a stroke.
I think Blair I sent that exact message.
He's the old man at the party that your parents say he's too old to change, just let him be. He's the one that squeezes girls' asses and thinks it's cute.
Except for when he's inebriated enough that one of the asses he squeezes is Charlotte's.
Ew.
Shame. All right, so here's the deal. We try not to get political on here, Tony. Let's keep it that way. All right, anyway. I don't dislike Hogan. I don't like him, but I don't dislike him. I've always been a big fan of Ric Flair. I more or less like Miz. He became a lot more relatable once the show started, the Miz and Mrs. show, because you get to see kind of that blue-collar ethic that Miz has as well. Liz, this was an unmitigated disaster, was it not?
You know, this is going to sound stupid, but it's the first thing that annoyed me was, like, they couldn't find a chair for Jimmy. That I have, it's completely irrational, but it's annoying the hell out of me. You know, it's like, why does Jimmy, have to stand? I would rather listen to Jimmy rant than any one of them. I mean, it was stupid, and this is probably naive and stupid of me, but I did not expect them, and maybe people did, I don't know, I did not expect them to announce these two assholes for Saudi Arabia. And I do watch those shows for various reasons, and this one is legitimately like, yeah, I can actually really skip this one. I grew up at the height of Hulkamania, and I never liked him. I could never take to him. Maybe because I always liked, you know, the villains. And I did. I loved Rick. I loved Flair. But Flair, even more so than Hogan, needs to just go away.
That's not cool.
He would have been more entertaining on Miz TV. That's not cool, Liz. That was Carlito.
Oh, I couldn't make it out. No, I couldn't make it out. I couldn't hear it clearly.
So the first two members announced for both teams are Randy Orton and Baron Corbin for Team Flair, Seth Rollins and Rusev for Team Hogan. However, Rusev apparently feels that Seth Rollins owes him a favor for saving him from a 2-on-1 beatdown at the hands of Corbin and Orton. Therefore, he is requesting that he gets the Universal title match tonight in Rey Mysterio's stead. Well, both their names start with R, so I guess what the fuck, let's allow it. Your main event for the evening is the aforementioned Universal title match between Seth Rollins and Rusev, and Jesus Christ, where do I begin? Liz, you know what? I don't even have the words to properly describe what happened at the end of this match, so I'm going to let you take this.
So, okay, so like first we get the limo. And then people are either like, oh, great, it's Vince, or, ugh, worse, it's Stephanie, or even worse, Shane, which you never, ever, until recently, the past few months, thought you would ever say. And then, of course, everybody's like, oh, the punk rumors. This is based on Twitter and personal conversations I was having. And you get Lashley. I can live with Lashley returning, right? I can live with that. But I said on Twitter, I typed it out just as it was freaking happening, this is going to be really stupid when Lana comes out. And I hit tweet, and I was like, okay, it's not going to be, let it not be Lana. But it was, and it's the stupidest thing out of everything they've done recently. This is even worse than the Maria thing. Okay, the Maria thing you could look at as like, oh, they're being punished for whatever the fuck they did. Or whatever, but this was ridiculous. They just had a similar storyline with the two of them a few months, you know, before Aiden became an announcer, where, you know, Aiden made it look like they were having an affair and this whole stupid crap, and now she actually is. Now, up until a few weeks ago, I mean, and listen, life happens. People find out their spouses are having affairs all the friggin' time and are blindsided about it. This is so ridiculous. So ridiculous. If you do follow them on social media, you notice that they really haven't been in each other's social media a lot lately. So I guess they're going to, you know, play up that crap. But I hate with a passion these relationship, marital, children issue storylines. I hated the Miz and his father. I hated the Ray and Dominic when it first happened with Eddie years ago. I even hated Miss Elizabeth and Randy Savage. I've hated them for a very, very long time. I have very strong feelings about this. They're never entertaining. Ever. And they never start out well. They never end well. There is never one redeeming factor about any one of them that they have ever done. And that was the worst cringeworthy. I mean, that kiss was worse than the Edge and Lita stuff. That's how bad it was. I would watch the Edge and Lita makeout session in a bed in a ring on loop for 24 hours before ever having to watch that again.
I mean, as a guy, Lita's boob pops out, so I'd watch that too. It's edited off of WWE Network, but it did happen.
No, is it really?
Tony. Yeah, they edited it. They edited that particular part of the segment off of.
Oh, I thought you meant the whole thing.
Yes.
Just the wardrobe malfunction. I thought you meant the whole thing. I was like, okay, that's weird. Sorry.
No, that's still there. Three simple letters. Three words to follow. WTF, Tony. What the fuck?
Oh, okay. Let me just rein this in real quick.
this is going to be good. Get your popcorn ready, kid.
I got to agree with Liz that a lot of relationship things that happen on Raw are not good because let's take sitcoms for a minute. One of the biggest downfalls of shows like How I Met Your Mother and Friends and shows that last longer than, I guess, maybe 6 to 7 seasons. One of the most common complaints is that the main characters become unlikable. Your viewing audience looks at them as kind of assholes or entitled pricks or whatever. They become caricatures of themselves. Now, mm-hmm. if you take that same ideology and you apply it to wrestling and you look at the characters and you look at the people that we've known to be faces, they're kind of dicks too. Their stances on things, when they choose to come out and help their friends, when they, you know, it just doesn't always coincide with what we believe to be as good. And that's why heels get cheered more often than not, because they're compelling. They've essentially trained us to not like good versus evil and instead like compelling versus annoying or nerdy or boring. This is more of the same in that vein, where we have a character who just came back, got the hot pop. People really liked him. They're chanting Rusev Day. Something as little as a mustache got him even more so over. We truly did miss him. And then you go back to the same retreat. The problem is the villain that you chose is uninteresting. Nobody cared about Lashley when he left. I can't remember the last time I saw him, and I wouldn't care if I saw him never again. Similar to Lana either. No one really cared about her. She lost her luster. She tried to be a wrestler, sucked at it, at least on TV. Didn't really come off as, again, a compelling character. Her accent disappeared and then came back and then disappeared again. There's just nothing there. So you have Rusev, who is by many means a sympathetic character as of right now, and yet you have no sympathy for him, mainly because when you see him standing in the middle of the ring, he doesn't look upset. He doesn't look shocked. He looks barely befuddled. He's simply existing. And then you have the two people up at the top of the stage. Lashley looked completely lost. Like first of all, he's standing there pandering to the fucking LED board waiting for the music to change. The fact that he has no eyebrows still bothers me to this day. The makeout session that they had seemed a little bit forced. I've seen better kissing on black.com. There's just a lot of issues with this, mainly because we've seen some variation of it already. Now, when I look back in the history of wrestling, and you talked about Elizabeth and Randy Savage, I know a lot of people have a soft spot for that. I don't remember it much. It wasn't in my heyday of watching wrestling. I know it existed. I watched wrestling tapes to catch up with stuff. I used to watch, you know, like years. I used to say, let me watch 98, let me watch 95, let me watch 92. But I wasn't in that moment, so it didn't really have as much weight on me as it did others. But when I look back on relationships in wrestling, truly none of them had as much an impact as Trish Stratus, Christian, and Edge. And the reason why that worked wasn't because, you know, of Christian and Trish. I mean, that kiss at WrestleMania, that blew the mind of my fucking, like, I was like, oh shit, she's a conniving motherfucker. It worked because you cared about everyone involved. Everyone. Right. Every single player of that particular issue.
Tony?
What?
It was Jericho.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
It was Jericho.
Yeah, well, what I basically, everyone cared. Everyone cared about everyone involved. And to that point, it became must-see TV. It was engaging. Now, you see what we happened tonight. First of all, we've seen it already with Maria, or at least some variation of it, and that's not entertaining. And then you end the show with this as if it's supposed to be a huge cliffhanger and or something that makes you want to watch next week. I'm not interested in this. I don't want to see Lashley versus Rusev. That's not new. It's not fresh. It's not something that I'm interested in even being involved in. I don't want to see Lana on TV. I don't care how hot people think she is. She's a very attractive lady. She's got great fake tits. I don't find her compelling as a performer in or out of the ring. So adding these two people back, making it a big deal like a limo pulling up, that just, it kind of killed the end of the show for me. Like, well, that, you set this up to be huge, and it's not. So it's like the first time I saw Charlotte Flair's tits. Just really was not happy about that at all.
I'm going to go ahead and let that comment rest. I'm not going to touch it. I will say a couple of different things about this particular segment now that I've had the opportunity to collect myself and get over my initial outrage. One, Bobby Lashley is a fucking horrible actor. Two, Lana's not much better. Three, the collective that I'm getting from the WWE's creative team here is that women are whores. Between Maria and Lana.
This is Days of Our Restless is what this is. I believe we had a saying for it back back when I worked for a local independent company, and all of the drama backstage that would never make it on screen. Now they're trying to turn it into drama on screen here. It's the Young and the Restless. And there's maybe there's an audience that appeals to. I am not a part of that audience. Tony's apparently not a part of that audience. Liz is not a part of that audience. And the only thing that you're going to do is Bobby Lashley is a beast of a man. He's 6'5", 290 pounds, and built out of stone. And he's stealing another man's wife because reasons? Rusev is as charismatic of a wrestler as they have on that roster. And he has to stand there trying not to cry because Lana's with Lashley. And Seth Rollins just fucking disappears at ringside while all this is going on instead of taking advantage of the situation, instead waiting for the Fiend to make his appearance. We give Paul Heyman a lot of credit on this show, and most of the time it's deserved. Swing and a miss, Paul. Swing and a miss. I feel better. That was cathartic. Hey, Tony.
What's up?
For our next talking point, you can blissfully bank on it. Singles action between Sasha Banks and Alexa Bliss. Because apparently, if you're a women's tag team champion, you're losing matches on television. It's just the way it is.
You know, I don't mind her losing because Sasha is
Sasha. I know,
Sasha.
I know.
I do mind her losing because of a kick to the knee. I know she's injured and, you know, you're supposed to play that up. But, I mean, at the very least, you're cringing at the knee. You're not suddenly unable to lift your shoulder off of the mat. The match kind of lacked any, I guess you could say, excitement. There was no question who was going to win. Not that I needed that question, but also these two, it's not a lack of chemistry. They did just fine. It just wasn't invigorating. It wasn't something, basically, when you have an opening as exciting as that, and the first match just kind of brings it down a little bit, and then you hear a random siren in the background, you just kind of, I don't know, you're taken out of it just a little bit. So I don't really have many bad things to say about this. It just was kind of there. I do like Becky wrapping her fist. I kind of like that presence. I like her little mini promo that she cut. I don't like Sasha standing on the top turnbuckle yelling at Becky as if she can hear her, because I'm pretty sure she can't. And it, you know, the interaction with them too was fine, but ultimately this was just kind of there.
Aw, Puddin.
She sees you loving Sasha. I just hope you know that. Liz, your thoughts on Sasha and Alexa Bliss?
Not much different than not much different than Tony's. It was decent, you know, for what it was. I think Becky was fairly decent on her limited commentary that she gave. She might have gave more that I didn't hear. It fulfilled its purpose of keeping certain storylines moving along, and I guess that's all I can really say about it. It wasn't, you know, wasn't anything that I'm really even gonna, you know, remember next week when if we come back and discuss it again. It was a decent match that was just there to fulfill a certain purpose, and it did that.
Like, I get that it was only there to further the Sasha and Becky thing, and I understand that. I'm perfectly okay with that because they are about to have only the second ever match for the women inside of Hell in a Cell this Sunday. That being said, the problem that I have here is, once again, we're using a champion as basically fodder for a different storyline when there are so many other women on the roster who could have been used in this position. Do any of them carry the same
the same amount of weight that Alexa would in the situation? Maybe not. But at the same time, you're not sacrificing a champion to take a loss in a match that she really didn't need to be in the first place. To Tony's point about the siren, I kind of liked that, actually, because it was a realistic effect of them ambulancing Dominic out of the arena.
You don't put a microphone on the siren?
It sucks for the women. I'm not going to lie there. It sucks for the women inside of the ring because it completely took the crowd out of their match because you could see people in the first few rows turning their heads towards the Tron in order to try to get a glimpse of what was happening there. Okay, so something that we didn't talk about in the Dominic and Rey thing that I feel the need to go back to here. And by all means, feel free to send all hate mail to hebdeagle@yahoo.com for this, because I'm fully expecting it. I know Lawler has a thing for teenagers, but Dominic is 22.
Let's just summarize that by saying that Jerry Lawler sucked tonight.
We're going to talk about commentary in full in just a little bit. Don't worry. Sorry, Liz. I know I cut you off there, but I actually did have that planned for quick hits.
No, I'm not going to talk about commentary in general. The whole Dominic thing, which annoyed me because I knew he wasn't a teenager, they actually haven't really been clear about his age. I mean, he's 22, so he doesn't really look like he's much older than, you know, not like he looks like he's 40. And they've kind of been playing up, you know, oh, his son and blah, blah, blah. They kind of have made it seem like he's younger than he is, so I can't really fault Jerry for that. Jerry might not actually know how the hell old the guy is, you know, so I give him a little pass on that, and the rest of it we'll go into later.
I'm going to say that I don't give him a pass for that, because if he knew that he was going to be the commentator this evening, which he found out about a week ago, he should have done his research.
He really sounded like he hadn't watched the product in like 2-3 years. Like when Seth Rollins' music hit and he said, "Who is that? Who's coming out?" Like, what? Lawler?
100% agreed, but we'll talk more about mm-hmm. that in a little bit. The other thing that I did want to make mention of was something that I saw making the rounds on Facebook during this whole segment there with Brock and Ray and Dominic. There was a meme that made the rounds on Facebook during that segment that said that Eddie would have protected me, and I could not help but laugh. We miss you, Eddie. That's a depressing anniversary coming up soon. Anyway, let's move on before the show gets brought down any further. All right, so it's time to hit quick hits. You guys ready?
Of course.
All right, I got to find my spot here and make sure we are. All right. Raw tag team titles are on the line when the Glorious Show-Offs defend against Heavy Machinery. Nobody cares that Heavy Machinery are technically contracted to SmackDown because there's a draft in a week and a half anyway. Regardless, Jerry Lawler. Save it for commentary. In the end, Rude picks up the win for his team, hitting the Glorious DDT on Tucker Knight to retain the tag team titles at approximately 11 minutes shown. Liz, your thoughts on the tag team title match?
I enjoyed it. Was it some 5-star stellar match? No, but, you know, it was a really, in my opinion, good match. Had some, for me, a lot of entertaining moments, and most of them were thanks to, not disparaging anybody, but Otis, you know, for a big boy, he can move. And I enjoyed the match. So, I kind of wanted Heavy Machinery to win.
Honestly, if Heavy Machinery would have won, I wouldn't have been upset. I don't. Rude and Ziggler just—it's mainly the way they got thrown together. It just doesn't appeal to me. I mean, you know by now that Ziggler just—I see zero value in him, other than, you know, he's an amazing wrestler, but character-wise, it just doesn't. It hasn't worked for me in a long time, mainly because there's no consistency and direction. The match itself was fine for what it was. Otis is a shining star for sure, and the crowd was really into it. The crowd, like I said, the crowd was into the entire show. which helped a lot of the bad segments and enhanced a lot of the good segments. This is one of the better ones. What they're trying to do is establish Roode and Ziggler as a team that is capable of beating real teams. It's, you know, one of the oldest booking tricks in the book, so it's nothing that I was offended by.
The Minnesota Viking Raiders of Oakland take on the Good Brothers once again, and this time pick up a victory when Ivar hits Gallows with a top rope splash, which Renee Young had previously dubbed 305 Live. One of Renee's better lines on commentary when she was on Raw. That being said, the Viking Raiders have now beaten the Good Brothers twice, the OC, whatever you want to call them, same, different bag. So, Tony, you just mentioned that you don't really care about Roode and Ziggler here. Do you think that this buildup for the Viking Raiders is taking them towards the tag team titles on Raw and then possibly a feud down the road with the AOP once they come back from their vignettes?
You know, whereas I see the value in Heavy Machinery, mainly because they are a more of a humoristic, you know, type of humorous tag team. And the match that they had with Roode and Ziggler, I wasn't offended by it. The Viking Raiders in the OC or whatever, I was offended because it was boring as shit. I don't know. I never watched them in Japan, so I wasn't a big, you know, like, I wasn't big on them at all. When they came to the WWE, I knew that the hype was there. I knew that they were friends with Styles. I knew that they were capable of good things. I think I've seen one Anderson match that blew me away. It was a singles match, and I forgot who it was against, but it was great. But that's literally it. And this isn't to say that they're bad. I just don't have any interest in them. I don't have interest in them talking about balls in doctor coats. I don't have interest in them wearing face paint. I don't have interest in them standing side by side with AJ Styles, and I certainly don't have interest in them fighting the Viking Raiders. The Viking Raiders have suffered the same thing that every other big team has, or big man has suffered, and that is my own personal disdain for squash matches ad nauseum. So you got two buildups that I'm just not interested in clashing more than once, and it just comes off as super, super uninteresting to me. So yeah, Viking Raiders going for the belt, I mean, sure, but again, I'd rather see Heavy Machinery take it than the Viking Raiders or AOP, which, again, they cut a pretty stellar promo in another language.
Liz, same question. Are you okay with the idea of the Minnesota Viking Raiders of Oakland being the challengers for Roode and Ziggler for the Raw tag team title?
Yes. I guess I'd rather see... I'd like to see anybody new. Ish. Well, I mean, new to the to having the titles, win to try to liven things up a bit. If it's the Viking people or Heavy Machinery, that's great. Just something, you know, different. I think the biggest issue with the Viking Raiders more than Heavy Machinery is their gimmick. I really don't think a lot of that stuff goes over well anymore. I've said that before. I'm sticking by it. I'm with Tony. I didn't watch anybody in Japan. I knew who they were. I knew, you know, whatnot, but it's not, they don't really do anything for me either, and I guess that's horrible to say. I'm not, you know, saying they're horrible performers. They're not. I just don't, you know, they don't grab me. I don't really have much, you know, need to really follow what they're doing, which is horrible. But if it's, I'd rather it be the right Viking people than them. Yeah.
Ricochet and Cesaro had a match, and if you blinked, you probably missed it. 2 minutes and 47 seconds for two of the best in-ring workers on the show. Meanwhile, Hogan and Flair were out there jerking each other off for almost 20 minutes. Look, I'm fine with the Use of Legends. Please don't take this as me being bitter towards the Use of Legends. But I'm fine with the Use of Legends when they're used to enhance the current talent. Hogan and Flair were not used to enhance current talent tonight. Ricochet and Cesaro then proceeded to go out there and have a match that was an absolute banger for 2 minutes and 47 seconds. But how are we supposed to care about 2 minutes and 47 seconds? Liz?
You don't. I mean, it could have been such a stellar match. Of course, we all know who I would want to win, but he loses. You know, he loses. I don't even have a problem with Cesaro losing. No one is probably surprised by that, especially with those. I didn't really care for the setup. I just thought it was, oh, you know, it's kind of like dumb. Oh, you're insulting somebody. I now must fight you, you know, fight you for their honor. For me, that's kind of ridiculous. But it was just so short. You know, I actually did like blink and miss it because it started. I went to make a joke to somebody about like, what the hell is Cesaro wearing? And then the match was over. And that's a shame because, like you said, they are the two best in-ring workers, or two of the best.
Tony? You know, I know a few guys that would be perfectly okay with 2 minutes and 47 seconds of action and say that they performed really well. Not one of them, but I know that. With regards to Ricochet and Cesaro, I mean, they did what they could with the time given to them, so I can't be upset with them. Nor can I be upset about the placement in the show. One thing that Liz pointed out that I do find kind of compelling in terms of conversation is the idea that there's a necessity for pride to be damaged in order to have a match. Like, I wonder if any of us would have complained if it was simply Cesaro versus Ricochet happened. Would we sit here on the reaction and be like, why are they even fighting? What caused them to want to fight? Well, they're wrestlers on a wrestling fucking show. So chances are, if they're booked to wrestle, they wrestle. So yeah, I totally side with Liz on that, where I love storylines. I love writing. I love good writing. Sorry, not just writing. But there's also this beautiful thing that you have in the wrestling industry where wrestlers wrestle. So when you see Cesaro versus Ricochet, you don't need a reason for it. You damn sure don't need Ricochet going up to Cesaro and cutting a pretty shitty promo. So I got to side with Liz on that for sure. As far as the match itself,
think about this.
That fucking flip onto the shoulders into the whatever, that shit was sick. That was beautiful.
That is a Dragon Rana. And yeah, that shit was hot. Anyway, take that backstage segment that they had, like 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever it was, and just give them that time in the ring. Let them decide it in the ring. Let them have the match. Let them tell their story in the ring. For as much as we love Cesaro on the show, and all three of us do, he is never going to be the best microphone worker. And as we've proven decisively over the last couple of months, Ricochet is not a strong suit on a microphone. Let them tell their story in the ring and take that time that you devoted to the backstage segment to let them have the match. Because why the fuck would Cesaro or Ricochet care what happened to Rey Mysterio? Regardless, moving on. New Firefly Funhouse tonight, Tony, and the rabbit dies again. I think that's like a running gag because this is like the third time the rabbit has died.
Yeah, he's like Kenny.
Oh my God, you bastards killed Kenny! Continue. Any thoughts on the Firefly Funhouse itself?
Well, I still think that it's intriguing. I still think that there's much to be, discovered, and I think that's on purpose. However, what I noticed today online, and of course my only source is Twitter and my Raw report, is that a lot of people are really souring on it, claiming that, you know, it was cooler when there was a divide between The Fiend and Bray Wyatt. It was cooler when there was less known. The more that they're exposing it, the less sense it makes. And I can't disagree with everybody. I get where they're coming from. But I think this really goes to this is one of those things where I feel like, although I don't know for a fact this happened, I really feel like Bray Wyatt sat down at his dinner table and waited till JoJo went asleep and just planned out this entire character, like, to the T, and planned out, like, weeks and weeks of vignettes and this and that and whatever, and said, this is what I want to do, this is how I want to return, what do you think? And the higher-up said, this is perfect, this is great, we're going to let you run with it, blah, 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 blah. And then 4 weeks pass, and they say, you know what, we got to kind of switch this up a bit. I think we want to do this with this, and then we're going to do that over here, and then let's move this over here. And before you know it, you have a character who at one point was completely and thoroughly fleshed out, now kind of unsure of the direction that it's going. I still see the trajectory of growth to it being born to where we're at right now. I still see the line that they're trying to draw. But I also get where the crowd's coming from, where it's a little bit jarring. Like, does he know that he's the Fiend? Is the Fiend an entirely different person? Is Bray being tongue-in-cheek? Who's voicing all of these things? Are we in the mind of Bray Wyatt and the Fiend is the person that's trying to be blocked? Is it the other way around? You know, all these questions, which there is an answer to, because I'm sure Bray Wyatt, the man, is smart enough to answer all those questions. It's just kind of being handcuffed by a creative team that doesn't really have all the juice that they could have. So when a segment like tonight happens, you're kind of left wondering, like, where do we go from here? I would say, and I don't say this a lot, but I would say to just not look too deep in this particular one and kind of let the actions speak for themselves. If anyone were asking for advice, because I've told you before, Harry, I don't like writing the stories for them. I don't like filling in the blanks for them. I also don't like when they assume that we are either A, incapable of filling in blanks, and B, totally capable of filling in blanks. I just like good stories. Seth being freaked out by this guy and them having a match that I think is going to be really good, that's what I'm most excited about here.
Liz, do you agree that it's potential overexposure that's causing the divide in the Firefly Funhouse?
I guess. I'm not going to lie and say I've sat here and thought about it endlessly in all my free time, because I haven't. But I think anything that they do, anything that any show does, is at a risk for overexposure. But I do think that now, since they have the Fiend appearing somewhat regularly, they should maybe pull back a little bit, or at least streamline it, or not hype it as much. Like, oh, we have a new episode coming up, like Disney Channel still alerts me, whenever there's a new Tots and a new Muppet Babies. Even though Cass is in school, I still watch them. But I don't think they need to be like, oh yeah, we have a new episode, it's coming up next. Like, it's, the hottest thing on TV right now. I think that probably hurts it a little bit. It could be a little bit more spontaneous.
I'm going to ask a question I never thought I would ask on this show. How was the Muppet Baby show?
So good. Really, it takes a little bit.
Is Swedish Chef the star like he was of the one that was on ABC a couple of years ago?
So super quick. It was just Piggy, Kermit, Rolf, Gondo, and then a new one, whatever the hell her name is, the penguin. I always forget her name. And it was still good. And Nanny, was younger. They don't show her. But there was a little bit of kind of like some backlash, like amongst all the parents. So they've worked Beaker and what's his name? What's Beaker's friend's name? Whatever his name. They're regular characters now. And then Rolf shows up a lot now. And they just did an episode where the Swedish Chef came, and it was freaking adorable.
Tony Muppets, yay or nay?
Nah, man.
You disappoint me, Sarah.
I got it.
But one of my favorite lines all time on a TV show is when Josh Groban guest starred on an episode of The Muppets, and Kermit was looking for Miss Piggy and found Swedish Chef and asked him if he had seen Miss Piggy, and Swedish Chef's response was, "Der Piggy, der Groban, der Groban." I had to pause the episode of the show. I was laughing so hard. Yep, that was my exact response. Right there. All right, let's move on. Lacey Evans and Natalya. Can we talk more Muppet Babies instead?
Yes, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
Meanwhile, Tony falls asleep.
No, seriously, though. Lacey cheats to win, therefore the feud must continue. Yay, I guess. Sorta. I don't know. At least they're actually facing each other instead of having surrogates for Natalya against Lacey Evans. Liz, what did you think? And I don't care is an appropriate response in this situation.
I was bored by it. Is that an appropriate response? I said before, which I say a lot, that I am a Nat fan. I don't think she's the greatest wrestler. She's absolutely horrible on the mic, but overall I am a Nat fan. I can't, and now as somebody who throughout her day, and I work from home people, I actually have a job. A lot of people question that because I cook a lot, but whatever. I watch a lot of older stuff. I grew up watching it. I watch the Andy Griffith Show daily. I watch Rifleman all the time. I'm currently binging Taxi, whatever. So as somebody who likes a lot of older stuff, I cannot take to her Southern 1950s, whatever the hell she's going for, you know, persona. I don't. Part of it, I think, is I don't think, like many of the other women, she's that great of an actress. I've enjoyed some of her, you know, matches and such, but they're both lackluster. When both people are so boring, it doesn't work. There's nothing to drag you in. I mean, neither one of them is that fabulous of a wrestler. Lacey, obviously, is better than Natalya, but for me, they're both boring as hell on the mic and in their acting. So there's nothing. They're not giving you anything to, well, they're not giving me, let me change that, anything to draw me in and make me feel connected to them or even remotely interested. So it's not that I don't care, and I know I say that about things. I do care because, you know, I do like Natalya, and Lacey is quite good, you know, in many things. So I feel that it can be better, or maybe they should just be working with different people that they play off of better.
Tony?
Nah, I'm cool.
That completely checks out. I'm just saying it does. All right, before we get to the final talking point of the show here, I'm going to bring up commentary at this point because I feel like now would be the appropriate time to do it here in quick hit. Tony, I want a letter grade for each of the three new commentators for Monday Night Raw tonight. Well, the returning Jerry Lawler and then the debuting on Raw for Vic Joseph and Dio Madden.
For me, although one is presumably a white guy and the other guy's black, I didn't hear a race at all. Which is to say they were completely interchangeable. I didn't really pay much attention to them. I've never been a big proponent of commentary overshadowing the performers, and that's what I feel Cole, Graves, and Renee did at different times. So they didn't bother me. I know a lot of people said they were kind of lacking the energy, that they weren't as entertaining, they were kind of boring. All of those things are fine with me. I don't need them to entertain me. I need them to tell the story in the ring. I need them to flesh things out. I need them to enhance things that aren't enhanced. And I need them to react in a way that I might react to certain things. Truly the only standout was Jerry Lawler, because it seems in the last 25 years, he has not changed his shtick at all. I have read jokes on popsicle sticks that are funnier than stuff that he says. Just not really, seems really out of the loop. Seems aloof, seems completely non-engaged with the product. And this is the guy that's on all the pre-shows. He knows things, you know. And also he's going the face route, which I'm not saying I need heel Jerry Lawler, but there's not exactly a personality quite yet, and that's going to come. I'm pretty sure it'll come eventually. They'll probably give it to King because they feel it's the only thing that he can do. So you'll start seeing him heal it up a little bit in the coming weeks. But I don't know. I don't have complaints with the other ones because I don't expect much from them. My only expectation from them is don't be Michael Cole. And, I mean, although there were little shades of Cole that you could kind of sense, they weren't Michael Cole. So in terms of letter grades, I mean, a C for the new guys, which means there's room for improvement, and a F for King, because I just it's not that he was like, you know, fucking teeth gnawing bad. It just was like, all right, King, you're obviously a relic in a, you know, you're the purple bear in Toy Story 3.
Like Toy Story 3. Liz, your thoughts on commentary tonight?
I mean, the worst part of it was definitely Lawler. There was definitely some, I guess, little comments, little jokes in there that didn't really fly and are outdated. The other two, like Tony said, you know, didn't bother me. I'm interested in, I've always liked, you know, Vic. We've seen him here, you know, here and there. But it'll be interesting for the two of them to find their, you know, find their voice and, you know, see how it goes. I don't actually see the caller being around long for one reason or the other. Even ever since the announcement, I kind of felt, and I can just be imagining things, of course, that he was, you know, put in there because they weren't even really, like, sure what to do. Because it seems very out of the blue. Because he hasn't even really been on the pre-shows that much that I've noticed.
Lawler's been kind of hit and miss. Dio Madden just came up to 205 Live recently, where Vic Joseph was.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph was also on NXT UK as well.
Right.
So Lawler's definitely been the least currently active of the three, and you could definitely tell. The problem is that the shtick that worked for Jerry Lawler in 1999 is not going to work in 2019. He can't
mm-hmm.
be the same Jerry Lawler he was back then. He can't use the same recycled material that he used back then, because fans nowadays aren't going to get the references that Lawler's making, and fans nowadays aren't going to care about the references that Lawler's making. I respect what Jerry Lawler has done for this business. He literally nearly died for us at the commentary table. That being said, the days that Jerry Lawler should be doing commentary are probably behind him. And according to what I've read online, this was not a Paul Heyman decision. Dio Madden? I can't give a conclusive decision on. I think that there's somebody else that was doing commentary that has a very similar type and a very similar style of doing commentary that I thought was better at it in Impact, and that was D'Angelo De Niro, the former Elijah Burke. That being said, I'm willing to give Dio a chance to improve. I actually like Vic Joseph. I thought that he did an excellent job on 205 Live between him and Aiden English and Nigel McGuinness when Nigel was still there. I think that he does an excellent job with Nigel on NXT UK, and I hope that him and Nigel are still going to do NXT UK, because I don't want to see that team broken up. In my opinion, they're the best two-man booth in the WWE. All told, Joseph didn't really stand out to me tonight, and as Tony said earlier, that's probably a good thing, because you want your commentators to be there to help you fill in the blanks, but not so overbearing that they take away from the product, which tends to happen with people like Graves and Saxon getting to their issues over on SmackDown, and then Tom Phillips is just helpless to do anything about it. What happens to the commentary team going forward? I guess we'll have to wait and see. But for now, I'm okay with Joseph and Madden. Lawler needs to update his shtick, or he needs to go. Tony.
What up?
Our main talking point for tonight's episode of Raw was, in my opinion, the best thing to happen on the show tonight. AJ Styles, Cedric Alexander, U.S. title return match, and these two had a banger. What were your thoughts on the U.S. title match tonight?
Yeah, good stuff. It's one of those matches where I really, really wished I didn't have to recap Raw, because when you do that, you're not really involved in the match as much as you're an observer of, you know, the specifics of the match, which is to say it's hard to enjoy sometimes. We've talked about that before. This was one where I just wanted to stop typing. I just wanted to just fucking enjoy it, because it was enjoyable. It was, everything made sense. AJ is just so crisp. Transitions that are just like, wow, just so impressive. It helped Cedric. It didn't hurt him. It helped AJ. It didn't hurt him. It was a bright spot on Raw. Not to say that Raw was all that bad, but this was just – it's one of those things where you know you're going to get a good match, and then they lock up, and they still exceed your expectations. I enjoyed it.
Liz, your thoughts on the U.S. title match?
I saw Cedric and AJ in the ring at first. Like, oh, I thought this was over. And not in a, like, ugh, you know, I'm tired of the two of them, because I'm not. But I was like, okay, I really thought it was over. But, you know, they definitely took that hesitation of wanting to see it yet again away, because it was a very energetic and entertaining match. It was definitely the top match of the night, and the two of them just continually make magic together.
I have no complaints about this at all. I thought they got the perfect amount of time, getting almost a full segment and a half. The match itself ran about 15 minutes. And anything that Cedric may have lost in the quick loss that he suffered at Clash of Champions, he regained here by having a competitive match. And I can guarantee you, more people were watching tonight's match than watched the Clash of Champions match on the network, because Raw on a weekly basis averages more viewers than they have subscribers to the WWE network. It's close now. It's a lot closer than it used to be. But Raw still does average more viewers. That's going to officially wrap us up for this episode of The Reaction. So let's go ahead and do our final reaction here for this last episode of Raw alone here on the show. Tony, favorite match or moment tonight?
I think I'll just go with the easy answer of Cedric and AJ.
Liz?
Definitely Cedric and AJ.
Yeah, there's really no doubt here. Cedric and AJ definitely put in the work tonight. Honorary mention to Ricochet and Cesaro for doing what they could with what little time they had. But I do appreciate them putting in the effort that they did for the time that they had. Least favorite match or moment, Tony, Greg Watry.
It's got to be the close of Raw. That just was not. Was not my, no. Maria's little mini rant in the backstage area was close second. Thankfully, Sasha cut that shit off real quick. But just, there's nothing, well, I can't say there's nothing good to come out of the whole Lashley-Lana thing. I just don't see it working out in anybody's favor.
Liz?
I agree with Tony. It was the worst possible thing they could have done, in my opinion. There's nothing redeemable about it.
We talked about it ad nauseum earlier. Anything else we add here would just be piling on. There's no point wasting any further time on it. Definitely the Lashley Lana pairing at the end of the show for me. I'm okay with the Fiend Seth Rollins attack at ringside, because you're at least trying to sell a pay per view match there, and I get that. But Lashley and Lana does no favors for anybody involved. Scale of 1 to 10, Tony.
6.
Liz?
I'm a bit higher, because it did keep me entertained, even if that entertainment was being riled up. So I'm going to say a 6.5.
I was right on the same number Tony was when I started thinking about this earlier, so I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to give it a 6 as well. Who's your MVP tonight, Tony?
I'm going to say Cesaro. I know Ricochet deserves some love too, but if there's one podcast in the wrestling world that's going to fall head over heels for Cesaro on a weekly basis, it's me and Liz.
Mm-hmm.
And by fall head over heels, he means shamelessly kiss Cesaro's ass.
Or nipples, whatever.
You do you, Tony. No judgment here. Liz, MVP?
Even in those silly pants, I do love Cesaro. So while it is easy for me to take the easy way out, as I often do with, say, Cesaro, I'm actually going to go with Cedric because, like I said earlier, when I saw him in the ring, I was like, oh, God, we're getting this match again. But he drew me right in. So he's my MVP.
So for overall rating, I agreed with Tony. For MVP, I'm going to agree with Liz and give it to Cedric Alexander. We know what AJ Styles can do. Anything AJ Styles does in the ring at this point doesn't surprise us. It's nice to see Cedric hanging with the lower main event, upper mid-card scene on Monday Night Raw. It's fitting in nicely. Similar to how we see Ali starting to do so over on SmackDown, hopefully getting more and more opportunities now that it's going to be nationally televised, and he's somebody that could bring minorities into the show with him being of Muslim background. So I'm going to give it to Cedric here tonight as well. I do believe that officially wraps it up for us. All right, so quick heads up before we do our final sign-off for the show here. Tony, we've kind of snowballed the idea back and forth before, but I'm thinking this may be what we end up doing here is two major talking points from both Raw and SmackDown and then kind of quick hits on everything else.
Yeah.
Just because if we try to do three or four things from both shows, we're going to be here for 2.5 hours, and nobody wants that.
I mean, it'll grow on itself. It'll change if it needs to, and we'll have no control over it. So just let it ride.
All right, we're looking forward to the next part of the show's journey with you guys here. We've been doing this for a little over 5.5 years now, coming up on our 6th anniversary in April. So obviously, as times change, the show needs to change a little bit as well. With SmackDown now going live right before we do the show on Fridays, before we do the show on Mondays now, both shows are live enough within a close enough proximity to each other that talking about both of them benefits both us as wrestling fans and you as the wrestling viewer and listener. For us to keep you up to date in case you miss a show, or for us, you guys to get opinions from us, or possibly to start sharing your own opinions again. If time allows, we may start taking calls again here on the show.
Yeah, we're really going to start doing a push for that.
For the co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi, and the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst, and this has been the debut, kind of, sort of-ish, of The Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Take us home, Tony.
Deuces, bitches.
Same stuff, different week. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next Monday night. Jinder Mahal on Friday, huh?
Not only am I seeing Jinder Mahal on Friday, which thanks to Harry for catching that tidbit, he will be at booth 502 from 1 to 2 and then 5 to 6. And by the way, it's totally free, which is amazing.
New York?
New York City Comic Con, if anybody's interested out there listening, if you want the opportunity to go meet former WWE World Heavyweight Champion Jinder Mahal, there you go. Continue.
But even quicker, on all weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, at Jinder's appearing with Earth Entertainment and Boom Studios. Headlocked Comics is having Mick Foley, somebody from AEW, and God forgive me for, I can't remember his name, Janelle something. I'm not too familiar with him. I apologize. Yeah, Joey Janela. Gangrel. It'll be appearing, Foley, and the two that I am going to meet and so super excited, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. Oh, and Sergeant Slaughter will also be there. But I will be meeting Kevin Nash and Scott Hall on Thursday, and Jinder. I know, I'm so excited. I cannot even speak. Jinder Mahal on Friday. I am so super excited.
Can I just point out that I loved your pronunciation of Gangrel?
I always say it wrong, right? It's Gangrel, right?
It's Gangrel.
Is it?
Yes.
Now I don't know how to say it. Now I have to go listen to it. What did I say?
You said
Gangrel.
It's Gangrel.
Whatever.
R-E-L is a rel.
Oh, sorry. It's my New York accent. I had a speech impediment as a child.
That's kind of what I thought it was, and that's why I found it adorable. All right, real quick, I have to ask you. Disney Plus, yes or no, is that happening?
I already subscribed.
My girlfriend already did as well. She did the 2-year subscription, so like if you sign up for 2 years in advance, you pay $120, and that's only like $5 a month.
Yeah, I did. I actually didn't do that one because I don't remember seeing it as an option when I signed up, but I did the one where it'll be like I'm paying for the year outright.
So the one where it's like $6 a month for the year, so like 70 something or whatever?
Yeah, it's like $79.99 in tax or some nonsense, which is, can't go wrong. Super excited. But seriously, watch the new Muppet Babies when you don't have anything else to watch. You're going to laugh.
Well, I have good news and I have bad news for that. I just checked the Disney Now app. They only have 2 episodes on there. They only have the 2 newest episodes on the Disney Now app. My Spectrum On Demand has 4 episodes, but they're only the season 2 episodes. None of the season 1 episodes are available.
Mm-hmm. Well, they don't have that many per season, so you can just DVR it when it's on.
I think it's 20 episodes in the first season, because that's what they showed the episode list on the Spectrum On Demand, and it had listed episodes 1 through 20. So I'm assuming that the first season was only 20 episodes. But the problem is, I don't have a DVR.
Oh.
So what I'm actually hoping to do here, once we get off of the air, is I'm going to go check that website that my girlfriend sent me. And it had a list of everything coming to Disney Plus. And I'm hoping that one of the things coming to Disney Plus will be Muppet Babies. Because I think the original Muppets are actually going to be on Disney as well, on Disney Plus as well.
Very, very quickly. So everything that's on Disney, all the Disney channels is coming there. And one of the reasons they're not loading more shows to the on-demand things is because they'll be loading them onto Disney Plus.
Well, because one of my favorite shows just got pulled from Hulu. Because it's going to be part of Disney Plus. Boy Meets World.
Oh, really?
They pulled it from Hulu because it's going to be a part of Disney Plus. Because Disney Plus has Girls Meets World as well. So they decided to restrict the rights to it. Hulu still has all of the other TGIF shows. But Boy Meets World got pulled.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah, I think once Disney Plus comes out, like, people are going to stop living for a few days and binge watch everything possible.
Restaurants are going to be empty. It'll be pandemonium.
Mm-hmm. Takeout's going to go crazy. Takeout. DoorDash will be busy.
Poor DoorDash. Poor Grubhub.
Oh, God.
Fun fact, actually used that service for the first time a couple of weeks ago, Grubhub.
But I like Grubhub. I use both of them. They're pretty good. I mean, very quickly, it's different, obviously, where I live. I guess you don't actually live in a rural area, but we have so many options. But what I love about them is that for Grubhub and DoorDash, a lot of the places that don't normally offer delivery are on there.
And that does make it a lot easier as well. Having the ability to order food from a restaurant where you would normally have to go in and sit down at, like me and Christine, the girlfriend, for those who don't know, listening to the show, we have a local place up here where I'm at called Falcon Grill that we order, that we go to all the time to eat. Neither of us was feeling particularly well 2 weekends ago, the last time she was in, because she didn't come in this past weekend. She was up here the weekend before. So we just ordered our traditional meal from Falcon Grill and had it delivered via Grubhub, and I think it was only like $2 or $3 more, and that factored in everything, including what we would normally get for like a tip and stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
One last thing before I let you go.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was agreeing with you. That's all.
So you realize WWE will slap a label onto pretty much anything it thinks it can make money on, right?
Yes.
We were on Amazon a couple of days ago, and one of the things that Christine and I like to do together is we like to play, like, board games.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that there is a WWE version of Guess Who?
No.
I love to play board games. Oh my god.
If we lived near each other, we'd be playing it all the time.
And as soon as we hop off of the show here, I will send you the picture that she sent me of it or having arrived at her house today.
Awesome. You know, before, very quickly, because I know we got to go, the one item I do want, which Renee Young went crazy about, and they gave it to her in a video for her birthday, is the crock pot.
It's the slow cooker. Yeah, that struck me as something that you would want just because of the fact of you doing as much cooking as you do and it being WWE themed.
I totally
that 100% checks out. Hey, Liz, do me a favor real quick before we get off the air.
Yes, sir.
Check your messenger.
Okay, hold on.
While we're on air, I want to get a real time reaction here.
I can. I have to update my messenger. Give me 1 second. Here, Harry sent a photo. Oh my freaking god, I need this. I don't know. I mean, I so need this. It includes 48 WWE superstars. Oh my god, that's going to be so. You guys like do a video of the two of you playing that for the first time.
She's not real big on like video and stuff, but I'll try to get her to send a couple of pictures your way once we actually get it set up.
You don't actually have to. You can just show the game. You don't even have to show her.
She's just a little camera shy. That's all. I don't know why.
Yeah,
she's
absolutely blame her.
Beautiful. I don't know why, but
she is. She's lovely.
She's Liz. I'm Harry. This has been The Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Thank you for listening for these last 5.5 years. We look forward to what's to come here on the show. I'm absolutely excited about the fact that we're going to be able to start working SmackDown into the rotation. We will still be doing pay-per-view predictions when those times come, and we encourage people to call in and give us their pay-per-view predictions as well. Obviously, tonight we weren't able to do so because they've only announced 3 matches. SmackDown on Fox taking precedent over a network special, whatever. But we want to thank you, the listeners, who have made this all possible by checking out the show over the years. We appreciate each and every one of you. We thank you for listening, and we hope you will continue to do so as we enter the next phase of The Reaction. I'm Harry Broadhurst. She's Liz Puglisi. He was Tony Acero. And deuces bitches indeed. Thank you for listening to The Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.